Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope you're enjoying your holiday tremendously, and I'm so delighted that you are joining us today because we are going to be taking a trip. Your imaginations are going to have to be used, and for those of you that are in the western area of the United States, or let me put it differently, let's say you love cowboys. You love anything to do with the Old West. You're going to very much enjoy my guest that I have today, Buck Jones, and his book is titled Wait, Wait for the Thunder. Buck, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I am so delighted to have you with me today because, one, your book, when I got it, I don't do a lot of fiction on my show, typically. And when I do bring an author on that has done fiction, I find it's because they have taken facts and woven an absolutely magical, in my view, story that brings history into a whole new level of understanding, but also mingling in a lot of imagination and wonderful, wonderful feeling. And that's what you've done with this book. You've really brought forth a taste of the Western world. And you're really quite an interesting man because you were born in California and you have done everything from repairing sewing machines to being in the military, the Navy, and the Air Force. You got involved with mortgage banking. You became the president of two companies. And you decided to retire at the tender age of 77. Cool. Good for you. Life has not been a dull journey, has it?
No, it hasn't. It's now, been fun.
Buck, with your book, you obviously have a passion for the American West and for the cowboy. And I do have to tell my listeners that the art that is right at the front of your book is just absolutely fabulous. Who is your artist?
Gary Grant. He's a young man, according to me. I'm almost 80, who drew these in Montana. He's got a lot of, he was in the war, so he's got a lot of war pictures also of armed soldiers in the jungles and things like that. But his first love is cowboy. He's from Havre, Montana, and he His art just absolutely floors me because he does this with a little piece of charcoal and a pencil, and the detail in his pictures are just amazing. The picture of the three cowboys sitting around the campfire, you can actually see a little bit of egg in the pan down there. So, you know, every detail of those drawings are just so really, they're just hard to describe how
they
this
are.
Guy does it.
It's as if you have a photograph that has been taken in a split second of time, and it's very much alive. And I don't know many artists that are able to do that. There are those, but they are technicians, as far as I'm concerned, of the highest order, because the folds of the cloth and the feeling of the everything is so exquisitely detailed. It's alive. It's breathing in what he's done. Now, Buck, you just have an absolute love for detail, but what was it that made you decide that you were going to write this story? Why was it important for you to do Wait for the Thunder? What was it?
Well, I'm kind of an unlikely author. When I was young and in school, I had a very hard time reading. I could not I don't know what it was, AZD. They got a lot of names for stuff now, but I had a difficulty. I read The Odyssey of Homer, and I read a lot of Sherlock Holmes and stuff, but it, I usually have to read every page more than once to really get it, so probably that makes me a very unlikely author. I got out of school by the skin of my teeth, high school, because my passion was to get into some sort of business and to start training horses. So I spent a few years just doing horse training and did a little roundup out in the desert for the Marine Corps. And I did some rodeo when I was younger in the Sacramento and Fresno areas of California. So that's kind of the background that brought me to this. After I retired, I'm one of these guys who gets up in the morning and I have to be busy until it's time to quit. And retirement just hit me like a rock. I mean, I couldn't think. So I spent a year taking harmonica lessons, which is fun, piano lessons, and I found out I'm no good at the piano. So I still got all my harmonicas, which I'm going to be using shortly. I'll tell you that story. I was getting a little bored with that, so I was just laying on the couch one day, resting, and I thought I had this little story that I'd had in my mind. I thought, well, I'll write a short story. And a year later, I had a book. So it was exciting, and I self-published it through CreateSpace, which is owned by Amazon. And now I'm ready for my next adventure I'll tell you about.
Oh, my goodness. Well, your book, the story, takes place in Montana, actually western Montana. And we're in the year of 1949. And the cowboys that you have, and cowboys for many people, if they're Western fans, I know my granddad was. Oh, my goodness. He just absolutely loved cowboys. John Wayne was his idol.
I met John Wayne at the Orange County Airport before it was called John Wayne Airport.
Okay.
And we used to catch the same plane together to go to San Jose. And it stopped in L.A. and then it was the old commuter flights, and so he'd fly up there, and I'd head on to San Jose, where I had an office, and then to Sacramento, where I had another office, and then to Fresno, where I had another office. So I got to know John and Duke, and he was just a splendid man.
There was a time when cowboys, that myth developed about cowboys, but a lot of it isn't myth, and we still have cowboys today.
Of course, we have more cowboys today than ever.
That is amazing. I mean, it's just like we have more horses than ever before.
I spent 2 months driving all through Montana, every city, researching the book. Everything in the book is accurate. The story about the restaurant at a town called Meaderville near the Anaconda Mine is interesting in the fact that Meaderville's no longer there. It's a hole in the ground. It was a mining settlement, and as the mine grew, the town disappeared. So it's not on the map anymore, but it's in 1949, it was very active.
You've got so much historical research that goes into this, but I love the portrayal of the character of the people who are out working hard, and I think in today's environment of modernization, as we often like to describe it, it is so difficult for people to understand what it takes, what it really takes to take care of animals, to feed them, to be able to take them to market so that other people will have meat to eat. All of this is something that is portrayed in here, and living out in Montana, that was a harsh environment. It's absolutely gorgeous country. When you go through in the spring and the summer, it just seems absolutely magical. I know I've been there. But
it has
some pretty cold winters, and it's a very, very hard environment. And that's what you bring out in this book. People, when they're reading this, they actually get in. I think you've done a marvelous job of being able to bring the characters to life, the code of honor and standards, if you will, among those that had to live close to the animals and to the earth. This was really significant to you? This seems to relate a part of your own character, if you don't mind my saying that.
Well, I'm hiding in there someplace. I think the mystique of the book is for me to not divulge which story is fact and which is partial fact and which is fiction. So I'll let the reader decide that.
Absolutely. Now, one of your characters ends up as a child. He ends up being hit by lightning, and this is in a time where people are out in the country. It wasn't something that in anyone's wildest dreams it could happen. He survived it.
Uh-huh.
And in surviving it, learned a lesson and ended up being out on a ranch in Montana and working there. Tell us about a mama. What is a mama? Because Luke needed to know what that was.
It's not a general term used by cowboys, but when I was working in that capacity, we always referred to the pregnant cows as mamas.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've talked to a lot of cowboys. Some use the expression. It's not normal, but it's not an everyday word that they use. But enough of it that I thought it was just interesting to put it in the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is. Now, Luke is one of the primary characters in the book. And this is a person that has a sense of adventure and really is curious about a lot of things. And he has a knack with horses, doesn't he?
Absolutely. He's patterned off a little bit off of my Uncle Jack, who was a very famous horse trainer. And his character is probably a composite of two or three people that I've known in my life.
What is it that creates the magic? There is an understanding by some people that among the Native Americans, when they worked with horses, they just seemed to really understand the animals. And, of course, all of us have our talents. Not everybody's going to be equal in that. But not too long ago, the horse whisperer was really something that was very significant. It seems to me, from the interviews that I've done with people that work with horses, whether it's therapy for children, adults, it doesn't make any difference, there is like a language, and I'll call it an invisible language, between the person and the animal that not everybody has. What was it that your uncle had that made him so unique in working with horses?
I don't know. Years after I did that, I saw the horse whisperer, and I saw a lot of Jack in that movie, being able to just get with a horse and become one, become partners.
Mm-hmm. Now you have Luke. When you started getting this character, how did the other characters come to life? I think as a writer, it's good to be able to share this with people who are listening, because you really got into this. Now, did you yourself live in Montana for a while?
I stayed in Montana. I have a brother-in-law up there and in Fort Peck. And I spent some time in Havre, which is right up by the Canadian border, about 30 miles on the Milk River. And I've always loved the country. The first time I went to Montana was my sister's wedding. She graduated from college in Bozeman, and she married a young veterinarian. So the story about Lucy in the book is sort of after my sister and Gary. I used the, in the story, I say she married a veterinarian and settled in Havre. So that's one of the truisms I'll reveal.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. There we go. So
she's proud of that.
You bring up in the story there's an injured person that Luke is taking care of and the travois. Now, any red-blooded kid that has a love of Indian history, the travois was a method of transporting people.
Uh-huh.
And if they were sick or not well, and there was a skill to building it, but it was very effective relative to taking someone of size and weight and or goods and taking them across rough ground. That, had you personally, have you been able to build a travois? Had you utilized
it? Oh, yes, yeah, yes. So, in fact, the interesting thing in history is before the horses came to America, the Indians used dogs to haul their you know, they put a little traverse on the dogs, mm-hmm. and they loaded it as, you know, and they had a lot of dogs, so they carried their tents and all their stuff, or their teepees, and all of their belongings with them by manner of dogs. Mm-hmm. And being a dog lover, I created some dogs in the movie that, or in the movie, I wish, in the book that I know about these dogs, and I used to raise them, so.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make dogs interesting along with the horses and the people.
There is a female character in your book, Nona Bell.
And yes.
And there's a bit of mystery about her.
Yes,
and
there is.
Loving to cook the way I do, I thoroughly enjoyed the competition between Nona and Frenchie. I loved the competition that would go on. And one of the things you bring out, and I learned this from a friend of mine who actually lived in, not in Montana, but in Utah. And his family was one that raised sheep. And he would talk about what it was like when he was younger and how being out on the ranch, the women of the household would get up very, very early in the morning, and they might start cooking like at 4 o'clock in the morning. Think of that, ladies, when you're listening to me. Cooking at 4 o'clock in the morning, baking the bread, getting the meat, everything ready, because the guys would leave like at 6 a.m., sometimes a little earlier, depending on the weather, and they would have to carry their food for a day or maybe 2 days. So the women really had to get a lot of this done early in the morning. But I'll tell you what, I don't remember him telling me about the fancy meals that Nona Bell and Frenchie cooked in this book. And I just love that, because it was, we've got to feed our people well, because if they don't have food, they're not going to be able to do their job. And it's very hard physical labor, ranching, and being involved as a cowboy. It's hard work.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, I love
it. Now, Nona Bell and Frenchie, who did you base them on?
Just, I don't know, there was a lady that I met on the ranch that looked typically a ranch wife, and she was a very good cook. Frenchie, I don't know, I have an interesting thing. I never had writer's block when I wrote this. A lot of writers do. I had something I call writer's gush. I had so much information coming out of my mind, I had to put a tablet by my bedside and a pencil, because sometimes when you come up with an idea, you can't remember it in the morning, especially getting to be my age. So I would get up sometimes 5 and 6 times in the night to write notes so that I could write it all down the next day. So I sympathize with authors that have writer's block, but it never happened to me. The long part of the book was done was doing research. The writing of it was probably 25%. The research 75%.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things about being in Montana, and I don't know if it's still the case today, but people could go in to the western area of the United States, go into places like Montana and Utah, Nevada, Wyoming. And they could actually build a new life if they wanted to. If they had left something behind, they could do that. And that's part of Nona's mystery. And with her and with Frenchie as well, and another character in the book. You have multiple levels to this story, even though Luke is such a significant character. And I really think that this detail with ranching life that you bring out and what the cowboys have to do, and the cattle. I mean, we get storms sometimes that go through areas where people are raising cattle, and it's devastating, because if you get a super-duper blizzard, those animals are going to die out in the wild. They're just, you know, that was something that in Texas they had major problems with in, you know, years ago, and in Wyoming and Montana. And it really affects them. I mean, if they do survive, especially the bulls, they can be sterile. All of this detail, this is just really a whole perspective of ranching and working in the rougher areas of country that I don't think most people even have a clue about.
No, I think I wanted to get that point out because that's a true story. If you remember, well, you probably don't, back in the 50s, early 50s, or there was a terrible winter in Montana, and there was called a haylift. And the United States Air Force dropped hay to the stranded cattle out across the plains in Montana.
Wow.
And to help the cattle survive. And it was a pretty good success. We lost a lot of cattle out there, as I point out in the story about the boneyard.
Now, with this, there is a sense that's developed by people that live this lifestyle. I've known individuals that will say, I smell a change. We've got a storm coming in. The sky will be as clear, blue crystal, absolutely magnificently gorgeous. And they'll say, nope, we're going to have a storm. It's coming in. It's going to be here in 2 hours. And by golly, that's part of your story, too. You relate how people really have a relationship with the environment that they're living in. And they don't take anything for granted.
Nope. I kind of tried to make it an all-American story. In fact, the original title I started under was Once Upon America. And as I wrote it, I changed that. And I think I mentioned that in the end of the book about the lifestyle and how it may be vanishing or not, you know, it's up to the reader.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like one of the quotes that you gave with one of the characters, and there was interaction going on. It says, if you have both feet in your mouth, you won't have a leg to stand on. And I thought, that is a very, very good quote. What sometimes people would be well advised to keep that in mind. But I really liked one quote that's in here. And this was up on the wall in a building that Luke was in, and he reads it, and this is the way it is. Friendship is a chain of gold, shaped in God's perfect mold. Each link a smile, a laugh, a tear, a grip of the hand, a word of cheer. Steadfast at the ages roll, as the ages roll, binding closer, soul to soul. No matter how far or heavy the load, sweet is the journey on friendship road. I really like that.
My grandfather had that in the restaurant at Meeks Bay when I grew up. I was there every year until I was about 12 for the summers. And that picture is my sister has on our ranch in Paso Robles, California. And it's an old man in a carriage and a man by the side of the road, and they're chatting. And it's a one-horse rig, and the poem is at the bottom, and it stuck with me throughout my life. I thought, you know, if people lived their life that way, that would be wonderful.
It's a fabulous quote. Absolutely fabulous. Now, we're not going to give away the plot in the book, but you also bring up the Great American Mustang Roundup.
Uh-huh.
Talk about this and what it meant to you and why it's in the book.
Well, it probably wasn't really the Great American Roundup, but it was to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't want to give that away. That's a fun part of the book. It's toward the end.
Well, there's a love story in here. Actually, a couple of love stories. There's even a story about the past, catching up with an individual and a shady character, a detective, that disappears, if you will, never to harass anyone again. But I really think that your book is full of wonderful, wonderful levels of what I think you were trying to convey, the American lifestyle, and how people had a code of honor, integrity, honesty, and they looked out after each other. And one of the things that I find so poignant about this is that people had to prove themselves. You weren't somebody's buddy. You had to walk the walk with the individual for a while so that they could assess you. And that was important. Do you think we've gotten away from that, Buck?
Yes, somewhat. But if you go to Montana, it's all right there. Montana, Utah, Arizona, Colorado, North and South Dakota, even parts of Washington and Oregon, and, you know, Nevada, all the old western states. I mean, not in the cities, but when you get out in the rural areas, you still got cowboys, you still got cattle, you still got wonderful Indian tribes that live. We have hundreds of Indian tribes that are in America, and I wanted to represent them because, well, my great grandmother was a Klamath Indian, and so she married my great grandfather, and so I guess that makes me an eighth Klamath Indian, but I've always enjoyed, you know, when I played cowboys and Indians, I always played the Indian.
Well, that came naturally.
Yeah, and so in my prequel, the book I'm writing now that I'm going to be researching, starts just after the Civil War, and my hero is named Esau, but they nickname him Sheridan. And he it's his 10-year trek across the United States in the Indian Wars, and then his rise to prominence. He ends up in China, he comes back, and he's the founder of North Flats Ranch. He's the father of Blaine.
Wow.
If you read the book, Sheridan's Blade is on the wall at the ranch, and Sheridan's Blade is the name of the new book. That I'm leaving here the 15th of September. I'll be gone a month and a half. I'm going to hit about 35 states, Indian reservations, campsites, and travel along with a big sign on the back of my little trailer that says the website, www.waitforthethunder.com, and all of the a few things about the book and author on board and books on board. So I'm going to try to pay for my trip.
I got it.
With book sales. So I've ordered a ton of books. I may be giving them away after this is over. I don't know.
Well, don't worry about that, because your book, Wait for the Thunder, involves so much. It involves the code of the cowboy. It involves a lot of wisdom. It involves so much history. And it's so easy to read. And I love the characters. They're real people. And that's what you have done so beautifully. So for those of you that wonder what you might do after you retire, who knows, maybe Buck Jones is going to be inspiring to you. But more than that, think of what he said, how his mind wouldn't sleep relative to this. It's as if the story came alive and had to be expressed. His book, Wait for the Thunder, well, you can go to waitforthethunder.com, his website. Buck Jones, your book is marvelous. I think it would be perfect to give as a gift to a youngster that maybe is having a reading difficulty but loves stories about the Wild West, or anyone that just wants something to read that takes them into a mindset and a reality of the soul of what I feel represents the American spirit, and that is the Wild West, but sort of modernized a little bit. Buck Jones, thank you for giving me this time today. It's been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you nothing but success, and enjoy your trip. And when your next book comes out, you've got to get me a copy.
I certainly will, and I'll be going on Facebook and doing my little daily commentary about the trip and what I'm doing and the people I'm meeting and things of that nature.
Wonderful. So go to waitforthethunder.com, and you'll be able to keep up with Buck Jones if you would like to. Buck, again, thank you. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break in a minute. Again, go to waitforthethunder.com. Enter a world that still, believe it or not, is very real. That of the cowboy, the rancher, and the heart, the history of America. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. Well, I wanted to let you know we are having some problems with our computer system, and so I haven't been able to get the newsletter out. We're going to be talking to a technician, finding out why we are having a challenge as we are, but my webmaster will be having that up on my site. So if you want to know what's happening with Donna Sebo, activities, et cetera, go to DelphiInternational.com, and probably by the end of the day, the newsletter will be posted up been available to read with all the details about upcoming activities. And then I'm going to be posting all the information on the guests on BBS, so we will be having that information available to you shortly. Tomorrow we're going to have as a guest Trevor Blake, 3 Simple Steps. If you're a person that wants to be involved in business, you are involved in business, you're really wanting to make changes in your life, you're going to enjoy Trevor. He is absolutely marvelous and has some superb suggestions. Emotional eating. Do you know of anybody that has dealt with it? Have you dealt with it? Do you feel as if you are in a vicious circle or you know of someone who feels this way regarding emotional eating? Well, Jennifer Tates is going to be my guest, and we're going to be discussing how you can absolutely stop that patterning. And that's so important. Equilibrium. Daniel Mendez. This is a gentleman who lives in Mexico, and he has decided that he wants to bring something better into the world, showing people that there's wisdoms that we can use to keep a balance in our lives, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So Daniel is a man you're going to enjoy. And then Cal Ore. She's a repeat guest on this show. Cal is a phenomenal researcher, and she has published books on the healing benefits of olive oil and chocolate. Well, now she's got a book out about coffee. Yes. And let's face it, Americans love their coffee. And we are going to be finding out facts about coffee that maybe you had no information about at all. So we've got a delightful, eclectic group of people with a lot to share. And this is the time when you can maybe learn a little, perhaps, be interested in a lot more. We do have a caller on the phone line, and if you want to chat with me, 888-627-6008. Caller, welcome to the show, first name or initial, and let me know what it is, where it is that you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Jean. I'm calling from New York.
From New York. Well, Jean, thanks for calling in. The first thing, we're in New York, by the way. New York City? Manhattan? Where?
No, upstate.
Upstate New York. Well, I'm delighted that you've been able to join us today. I'm wanting to say right off the bat that you feel like you're caught between a rock and a hard spot. When I'm watching you in my mind, there are a lot of discordant thoughts that I am picking up that are undermining you. And you have done a lot of hard work to get yourself to a level of achievement and responsibility, which is fine, but you're really wanting to broaden your experience. You're really wanting to expand your experience, your finances, and you're wanting to do it not in just 20 degrees. It's like I want to do it in a 180-degree sweep. And as I'm watching this, I do have to caution you. I'm going to say have some patience here, because I'd like to see you aligned with people that represent the qualities of character that you really want to be associated with. And it may take you a full 2 years, even 3 years, to see your ultimate objective coming in to fruition. Now, the imagery I'm getting in my mind is that you need to be aware. At this time, you're planting seeds. It is very important for you to recognize that you don't keep digging up the seeds that you plant, because seeds have to have time to germinate. They have to have time to do their own magic. Don't try to control everything. You can't anyhow. Do the best with what you've got. Keep the dream. Allow things to flow. Don't try to force them, and you'll come out ahead. But I keep getting this imaging of you're planting seeds, and you keep digging them up to see if they've grown any. It doesn't work. Sometimes you just have to let go and keep on doing that which you know is appropriate for yourself. So patience is really going to be important in these next 2 to 3 years. What question do you have for me, Jane?
So my question was, I'm looking for a new job, and I've been interviewing with a few different companies, and I'm wondering if one of those is the one.
All right. What kind of work are you looking for, Jane?
Software companies.
Well, you may find, not right now, let me answer your question first. Yes, you are going to be able to get a job. It is not going to be exactly what you want, however, but it is going to be a level of experience that you will find very valuable to you. So you are going to be employed. I'm looking at the number 6, so I don't know if it's in 6 weeks, but I'm getting the number 6. It's either 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months. It's not that long a period. I do have to make you aware, though, that you are going to continue to strive, and that's what I was getting in the beginning. You're going to continue to strive for something that is going to allow you to use your skills and talents in a more expansive way. This is marvelous. But there's this stair-stepping that you're going to have to go through. There's no other way to describe it. So, yes, you are going to be working within a cycle of 6, and you are going to feel a bit frustrated with it, but if you're wise, you will continue to expand on your education and the development of associations with people, again, of the character and the temperament and the skill level that you want in association and in representation in your life. And you'll come out ahead, Jane. Eventually, you're going to have a business of your own, but you're not ready for that yet, and that's perfectly all right.
So the reason I asked is I'm in the process of building or getting building permits to develop a piece of land, and I'm just wondering how that is all going to work out.
I wouldn't push on this too hard. I would just let things flow. Building on a piece of land, all of that's going to fall into place. Don't lock yourself up too tightly in intense financial commitments. You want to be more on the conservative side. You want to allow things to flow. Don't feel like you're at war or that you've got a battle in front of you. Things are going to flow. Allow them to flow. That may not make much sense to you now, but let things flow. You're going to get the permits, but let things flow. By the way, on this piece of land, you have very poor drainage in a particular area that could be a handicap. So you need to have the soil checked so that you know where to put your buildings. When heavy rains or heavy storms come, you're not going to have a flooding problem. And if you choose to build on the area of land that does not drain well, then you need to structure the building so it will handle that water flow and the lack of drainage appropriately. And okay. Jane, I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel, and if you would like to chat with me today, give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. And I wanted to share a quote with you this morning by Nido Cuban. And the quote is, "The trouble with many plans is that they're based on the way things are now. To be successful, your personal plan must focus on what you want, not what you have." And I thought of those words, and that's sort of saying in a different way, count your blessings where you are. Don't focus on what you don't have. Focus on what you do have and build on that. So it's just a different twist on the same kind of thought. But I really think that many times we are not aware of how much we really should be grateful for. I was visiting with some people who come from India, and this is their homeland. This is something that they are very, very clear about. When people think of India, we always think of it as being exotic and all of the beauty. The Indian history is just absolutely amazing, and it's filled with wisdom. And yet, the level of poverty in India is astronomical. The caste system in India is phenomenal. You have so much diversity and so much isolation, even though there is this massive population. And they said, people in the United States, and they live here, they love the United States, people in the United States don't realize that they are living in castles. He's talking about the average American living in castles compared to the way most of the people in India live. And I found this really something very fascinating to hear from people. And they've traveled all over the world. They said the United States is unparalleled. People have no idea until they go outside of the country how so much we take for granted here. In the United States, most people in the world don't even have a chance at this point of having, unless they change their thinking and or the governments or whatever is going on. And I thought, this is important. When you focus on what you have and you're grateful for what you've got, then you're going to be able to expand. You're going to be able to grow. But if you sit in your pity pot thinking that you don't have anything, you are poor. You are going to lead a mediocre life. You're always going to walk around feeling empty because you're never, ever going to have enough. You're never, ever going to feel that anything is worth doing. You'll evolve into a very pessimistic kind of thinking, and that's your choice. That's what you have the privilege of doing, but your mind is the controlling factor of your life, believe it or not. Actions follow thinking. So we need to be aware that how we cultivate our own mind, what we do with our thinking, expanding our education, being open to new ideas, looking at things that are not positive, that are not going to be healthy to have in our space or our environment. It could be negative people, it could be negative thinking, but really looking at stuff with an eye for understanding why it no longer suits our needs, we move ahead a lot quicker. You just really are going to move ahead a lot quicker. When it comes to education, how many times have you been of the mindset, oh, I'm not smart enough to do this or that or the other, instead of saying, I don't know if I'm smart enough or not. Let me go check it out. Find it if this is something really I want to do. And your strength, as a person, you need to focus on those strengths. What are you good at? Do you like whittling? Are you good at carving? Are you good at artistic expression? Are you good at mechanics? Are you good at dancing? Are you good at working with children? What are you good at? Do you like organizing things? What do you love? What, when you're involved in it, brings a smile to your face and makes you want to sort of do a little dance for happiness? What is it? And don't tell me that you don't have something there. That's where you begin. That is where you begin. What is it that turns the light on inside of you and just makes you glow? You feel good. It can be everything from baking a cheesecake to building a skyscraper. It doesn't make any difference what it is. But when you get in touch with that part of yourself, and then you start acquiring disciplines, and you start investing in yourself, it expands. And amazingly, you're going to find you have more talent than you ever dreamed, and it's available to use across multiple environments. It's fabulous. It's exciting. It's wonderful. And one of the best ways to discover it is by being open and learning and communicating with people that maybe you've never, ever had a chance to chat with. Makes all the difference in the world. Donna Sebo here. Let's take a break. I'll be back, and I'll take a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone line is 888-627-6008. I want to share a story with you about a woman that took her talents and used them in a way that she never dreamed it would happen. I'm going to be sharing a story with you about Abby. Abby lives in Missouri, and in May of last year, 2011, there was just a mass amount of tornadoes that hit Missouri. And those poor people were just pummeled like you wouldn't believe. People rallied to the needs of those individuals. Abby was one of them. Now, Abby lived just about 10 miles outside of Joplin, Missouri. And the people of Joplin, they were smashed so hard by, and I literally mean smashed. It was just nothing but degree. 7,000 homes were just flattened or blown away. I mean, it just disappeared. Everything that those families had. Well, when she heard about this, Abby was very much involved with her job. She worked for a digital photo scrapbooking company. And before, it was just a short time before these tornadoes hit, that she had hosted a gathering with a friend of hers in Joplin. Well, naturally, when she heard about the tornadoes hitting and the devastation, this friend, who just a short time before all of this occurred, she had been with, visiting, she contacted and found their house was totally gone. Absolutely, totally gone. Now, she wasn't able to go into Joplin. She has a family, and she had to take care of her children. But she said, maybe I can donate some clothing or food. She was trying to figure out how she could help. Well, she was listening to a radio show And on this talk show, a woman called in saying that she had found photographs in the rubble. And that just blew Abby away. She said, a photograph surviving all of this horrific devastation? Is it possible? Well, this person that had called in to the station said, I've got all of these photos that I'm finding. I just don't know what to do with them. They're going to be very important to somebody. Well, this was part of what Abby dealt with every day. Digital photography, etc. So this is what she did. She was very familiar with Facebook, and she set up a Facebook page called Joplin's Found Photos. And then what she did, she went and contacted churches in the area and let all of the people know that she would set up boxes where if people found photographs, they could drop them off in these boxes, and she would pick them up. Within 24 hours, hundreds of photos had been put in boxes. And, of course, many of them were damaged. They were dirty or what have you. But she gave a number to each one of these photos. Now, just imagine the time that it took Abby to do this. She gave each photo a number, and she'd uploaded it into Facebook. Do you know people were on Facebook? They started to find these photos and say, this one's mine, that one's mine. And she just got all kinds of response. One of her photos, which was 1,853, a woman contacted her and said, that is me and my husband on our honeymoon. It's the only photo we even had that wonderful time in our life. And then there was someone else. There was another photo. A man said, this couple with the dog that you've got this photo of, those are my parents. I know who those people are. Well, it was affecting people in Joplin in a big way. Sometimes people that she knew, they were keeping up with what she was putting up with. They said, oh, I know this person or I know that person. And so there was a connection with so many people that without this technology just wouldn't have been possible. Now, Abby even took time to try to find the owners, and she returned as many of them personally to the individuals that they belonged to. And she said, it was heartwarming. There was one man who lost his wife during the storms, and the photos just meant everything to him that she had found. And there's just other stories about a mother who died saving her son while there were the photos that belonged to the family. And the family member said, this is important because we'll be able to tell her son about his mom. They'll have a picture of his mom. Because of her sacrifice, the baby lived. So there's just so many thousands of these pictures. Do you know that this woman has returned over 3,000 of them? That's right. Abby said, photos may seem like small comfort when people have lost so much. But what she found was a picture is a celebration of life. Photos are a visual history of the people we love and the times we've shared, and a way to pass those memories on. She said, I feel honored to give such a priceless gift. So all of these things that she became involved with, look at how her life just expanded, doing what she had the capability of doing in a situation that was devastating for so many. She brought a hope, she brought love, she brought light, she brought memory back into people's lives that thought they had lost absolutely everything. It's wonderful. You make a difference. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, you make a difference. And I'm so delighted that you were able to share this time with me today. I invite you and your friends to join me again. Same time, same place, right here on the Donna Sebo Show, because sharing with you is what makes this program so important to me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't let anybody else tell you how to use your mind or your talent. Listen when someone makes suggestions, But remember, you're the one that can make the choices, making your life as rich as you want it to be, or, on the same token, as poor as you want it to be. It is all up to you. Donna Sebo here. Thank you again for joining me. It's been a delight. We'll chat again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.